Skyline is introducing a new chicken chili. Come get that world-famous Skyline flavor you love with a new protein option. Try the new Skyline Chicken Chili on Waze, Coney's, and all your Skyline favorites. At Columbus Skyline locations only, while supplies last.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams July Summer Sale and get 30% off paints and stains July 18th through the 28th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Karen Reed.
Day 16 in the trial of Karen Reed, and it was another bumpy day, I guess, depending on how you look at it. We're going to be talking about it. Stacey Cole sitting over here. How much of it did you get a chance to catch today live?
You know, I didn't catch a whole lot. I caught Beverly, Judge Beverly, basically giving her denial of the continuation that was. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I just blow it? Tony's like, I'm editing that out.
I don't have time. There's okay, your teaser.
Sorry. Well,
there's your teaser.
Okay, it's a 50-50 shot. Either she denied it or she approved it. We'll never know until we play it.
She, of course, comes back and, look, she actually does approve it. But there's more to it. There's more to it. There is, she does recognize some grace to the defense as well. So we're going to hear the last of the arguments in this. They were talking yesterday when we were doing this, and we were hearing the arguments back and forth from the prosecution and the defense about this issue. They did another about 20 minutes of this in court today. No jury present going about this issue. Then they go back to more testimony, and then they get to Judge Cannone's ruling, and we'll listen to it all. Let's jump in.
And I'll quit giving it away, I promise.
They're playing musical chairs right now.
Well, it's such a small courtroom. I feel like they'd be tripping over the chair legs of everybody.
Yeah.
I'm surprised we don't see more people trip.
There's a lot of trials that have no cameras going on.
Yeah.
I know I'd be tripping everywhere if I were in this setting.
Yeah, you think moving around in a movie theater is hard. This place is just jammed.
Here we go.
He.
Just got the wig on.
Part.
Thank God we don't wear wigs in this country.
Yeah. See one another. Oh, the water. I'm good.
Now we're looking at the fan again.
It's mesmerizing.
How often do you think they clean that fan?
I don't know that they have to. It's always running.
I have fans that are always running, and if you stop those guys, you don't want to look on the top.
As far as the session, please be seated. Thank you, Your Honor. Yesterday, Your Honor discussed with the parties, and parties were heard with regard to the issues we have raised with regard to the timing of the May 8th report from Mr. Burgess that the defense received on May 11th. And what I wanted to do, Your Honor, is briefly provide the information Your Honor asked for yesterday, which was how much time we might need under various circumstances. Okay. And so I wanted to take a few moments to put that in context. It will only take me a brief amount of time to do so. So, Your Honor, there is a timing issue, but there's most importantly a substantive issue. I will not, of course, go into the detail of yesterday, but the timing really does is informed by the substantive issue. And so, with regard to the matter, we went back and we looked at more deeply the effect of this timing and this movement of the what has been referred to as clock drift in Mr. Burgess's report that we got on May 11th. I spoke of the significance yesterday, and here's what I would like to add as is relevant to the time we're going to need. I again urge the court to reject it substantively, because what we did was we went and we looked at matters such as the cross-examination of a key witness in this case, Jennifer McCabe. She testified with regard to observing a vehicle at 12:45 a.m. And that's a significant point. I know I don't need to elucidate for Your Honor. It goes, all of this is going in significant part, if not total part, to what has been as alleged a collision here, which we vigorously contest. No collision ever occurred. But the timing of what's alleged by the Commonwealth is very important. The seconds are important. Literally 1 second can turn not only the Commonwealth's theory completely around in circles and debunk it, but also the jury's analysis of it. And this is the point I wanted to elucidate today, is that the jurors have been provided information and the defense has aimed its defense on this claim based upon, in large part, timing. So now what we have is we have on May 11th, Mr. Burgess changing the timing. So what does it affect? Not only witnesses like Jennifer McCabe, who we crossed, we strategized with regard to, but also my decision to not even cross Trooper Guarino, because Trooper Guarino had testimony with regard to when Ms. Reed connected with the Wi-Fi at One Meadows, and there's a certain time associated with that. We have Mr. Whiffen, who went through, the Commonwealth went through a timeline, and we believe they went through a timeline for the theory that they had, and I cross-examined Mr. Whiffen extensively with regard to that timeline. There were several defense strategies and effectuations of strategies based upon that timing. So with regard to the substance, Your Honor, and there's more, but I think that's a fair representation. It innervates our entire defense. The question now of Your Honor of how much time it will take the defense to react to Mr. Burgess, I wanted to say it's not only a reaction, but it's a substantive defense analysis, and three-quarters of the effectuation of that has already occurred through our presentation in terms of cross-examination. So we would have to, and we're still evaluating that, revisit all of that. And secondly, we would have to put that into the calculation of all of our witnesses that we've already prepared that are based upon that timeline. So it is a very significant point. And to the extent that the Commonwealth tries to argue, well, you know, we never really committed that much to a certain time period. I again urge the court to look at the report of Dr. Judson Welcher, where he has 1162-2 with a specific range, 1238 to 43. And even in their range, it's a very small time, which further supports how each second matters in this regard. Now to the answer to the question Your Honor asked yesterday. Again, I urge that it just be rejected and we keep this trial moving in its current pace. To the extent that that does not occur, and again, we urge that it be rejected, the report, because it's a Rule 14 violation, there is no remedy for the defense However, to the extent and given your honor nonetheless asked me for an answer in time, we would need 4 days to be able to address it. We will not ever be able to recover strategically or substantively from it, given all that's been presented to the jury. And it will be very difficult to figure out how we're going to go present a defense after we've already presented to the jury our defense and our cross-examination. It's not really structurally possible to simply take 4 days and address Mr. Burgess, because we can't go back to all the witnesses I just mentioned and others and start crossing them in eliciting testimony with this new time period in mind. But I wanted to answer the question, Your Honor, respectfully. It would be 4 days for us to even go from where we are now and then try to alter not only witnesses such as Arca, but DeSogra and Gaffney and other types of witnesses that we have in that regard. So, my Your Honor, respectfully, okay. That is my response.
All right. Does the Commonwealth want to be heard?
Thank you.
Okay.
Respectfully, Your Honor, the defense is very confused. They attempt to confuse the issue. They attempt to confuse Your Honor about what the impact would be. This has never been a change. The government is not changing their timeline. The Commonwealth is not changing any information. The Commonwealth is not offering anything that affects in any way the testimony of witnesses. It's notable in the argument there is no relationship to the facts or the actual report that was provided. The Commonwealth has always provided the data, which they have and they hadn't chance to analyze. And the interpretation of the data has been different between the parties. We have been clear from the beginning at the time in which the infotainment system shows that there was a collision. We've been clear. And the data has been clear. That has never changed. That data in the Telestream system is based on a clock in the Lexus, which full sides know full well is different than a clock in an iPhone. You can see all the productions of Dr. Welch's PowerPoint presentation where it shows that time, 12:31:43, has never changed. Also, it has been clear that both sides appreciate that there is a variance between the clock in the Lexus, which leads to that system information, and a clock and an iPhone. In fact, the defense was so aware of it, they hired an expert, Mr. DeSorga, who gave his opinions about that variance. We have never suggested there was not a variance in this case. In fact, we have highlighted the variance. When their expert, Mr. DeSorga, provided a report, we believed that his analysis was wrong. And so we looked at the variance and the data that was available from the Telestream system and John O'Keefe's Waze data that was on his phone that was always available to all of the experts in both sides. And when Mr. Burgess looked at the variance at the time of a three-point turn about 7 minutes before the collision, he simply matched the Waze information on Mr. O'Keefe's phone to that of the information from the Telestream and saw that it was a 21 to 29 second variance. All that data was available to the defense because their expert made an improper conclusion is not our fault. This does not change the testimony of anybody. They point to Jen McCabe's text message where she said she thought she saw a motor vehicle out front that evening at 12:45. That is not consistent with the Commonwealth's timeline, but that doesn't change. That favors the defense. It does not change anything to do with ARCA. ARCA has not, as far as I've seen in any reports, ever talked about the variance, just Mr. DeSorga. And so because this is inconvenient for the defense, and because it further focuses the variance that we already discussed and provided, isn't a reason to exclude it. It's not late discovery It's not a Rule 14 violation. It is further analysis of information that was already provided, opinions that were already provided, and it is in response to their expert's mistake about that variance. There's nothing new here. Nothing has changed.
Okay.
Go right ahead, Mr. Lessie.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The only question I had for you
round three.
Respond to today was the time, so I gave you more leeway.
And I'm giving you more leeway, and I appreciate it.
Go right ahead.
Mortal Kombat.
Your Honor, as I alluded to yesterday, it's been a point that Mr. Brennan just made. We believe strongly, Your Honor, that at a minimum there needs to be a voir dire of Mr. Burgess. And we believe strongly there needs to be a voir dire because we have a serious concern that the sequestration order has been violated. He has changed a very key aspect of this matter after the testimony of Mr. Whiffen, after Mr. Whiffen presenting a timeline in his report, Mr. Burgess, his new purported report of May 8th. He references to align it with Mr. O'Keefe's cell phone. That is the essence of Mr. Whiffen's report, is anchoring in his timeline. He did a whole timeline on Mr. O'Keefe's report. And conveniently, the proposed alteration by Mr. Burgess in his report of this clock drift now makes it very, very close to fitting within Mr. Whiffen's timeline and the theory of the prosecution. At a minimum, we need a voir dire to ask Mr. Burgess, why did he do what he did? Another reason for the voir dire. Mr. Brennan yesterday said, we were surprised to get the report. That further makes great concern as to why Mr. Burgess did what he did. Lastly, Your Honor, with regard to Mr. Brennan's point, he made it yesterday and I corrected it. He said it again today, that supposedly our witness, Mr. DeSogra, made an error and that we're trying to correct an error of Mr. DeSogra. That is incorrect, Your Honor. Again, Mr. DeSogra was responding to Mr. Burgess's report. Mr. DeSogra's report is entirely saying, okay, Mr. Burgess says this, and therefore the defense says this. Now Mr. Burgess is changing what he is saying. So it is completely incorrect to say that Mr. DeSogra is trying to correct an error. That would require, again, Mr. DeSogra to change what he has done. Final point is this. There was also an issue, Your Honor, and this is extremely important with regard to burden shifting. There's not only the question of should this be allowed at all, there's not only the question of how much time the defense will need, but there's a third and important issue, and that's burden shifting. What Mr. Brennan proposed yesterday was a very irregular process where essentially the Commonwealth gets three bites at the apple for a problem that they caused. The problem we're talking about is Mr. Burgess changing a significant part of a timeline. Yes, there was a variance that he had, but he picked a range of the variance. He's now changing the variance. So what the Commonwealth is proposing is that our witnesses go forward, The aperture gets to wait, they come on, and then they get to come, the aperture gets to come on yet again.
I did not understand the Commonwealth asking me that. Are you asking me to do that, Mr. Brennan?
I appreciate the clarification.
I'm not sure what he's saying, so.
It sounds like DeBroja or whatever.
His name is DeSogra, yes.
DeSogra, you're suggesting that the Commonwealth suggested yesterday that he testifies first and then the aperture witnesses?
What I understood was going to happen is Mr. Brennan said yesterday that Dr. Welcher cannot come in until after.
No, I didn't understand that. I understood Dr. Welcher, Shannon Burgess, and then Dr. Welcher for everything that you folks received prior, that January 31st or whatever the date was. And then potentially for all the new ARCA information that came in May 7th, that portion, Dr. Welcher returning on rebuttal for. Not that they were holding back Dr. Welcher completely. Is that correct, Mr. Brennan?
That's the conversation I had. That conversation I wasn't part of.
Yeah, I think you misunderstood that, Mr. Lessie.
So just so I'm clear, what is it that the rebuttal...
Mr. Brennan...
All right. This is separate, and I'd really like to give everybody a break here. What is it the Commonwealth is asking to do regarding that?
Regarding Mr. Burgess or Mr. Welcher?
It's Dr. Welcher.
Dr. Welcher should come in and testify to his PowerPoint, all of his opinions, which address all of the prior representations and opinions of ARCA, although we still don't have any raw information, but we're ready to move forward. Regarding any new opinions, which there is over a dozen new opinions, that includes testing, video, experiments, Dr. Welcher should have enough time to review, conduct his own testing, turn it over, and then in rebuttal, address limited to the new issues raised by ARCA.
That's how I understood it, Mr. Alessi.
And that's how I did also, but the question is, now with the Burgess changing of the clock drip, how many times is the Commonwealth proposing that Dr. Welcher gets to come in and talk about that? Is he just going to come in and talk about it?
So you talk with Mr. Brennan about that. All right, so I'm all set for this.
There are no changes. There is no changes in the timeline. He keeps trying to portray this as something has changed. Nothing has changed. It's the exact same. He's always said there's a variance. He's been looking into the variance for a long time, and now he has found a method to show the exact variance. It's not changing. There's nothing in the reports that changes as far as the timeline. That's just an attempt to cause fear. There's nothing that has changed. We can look at the reports. It's all the same, always has been, other than now he's identified the mistake of their expert, and that led him to be able to identify the variance, which is helpful and new. And the suggestion that there's been some violation of an order, no good faith basis whatsoever.
Does the Commonwealth oppose a voir dire just on that one issue?
Yes, because it's suggesting that there's a good faith basis for it. Nothing has changed. Ian Whiffen's report was available to the defense and our experts months and months and months ago. The issue of variance has been an ongoing issue for months. There's nothing that triggers a change in the testimony to adopt or adapt to it. Our timeline has been the same since when we turned it over at the beginning. They cannot point to one thing that has changed between Dr. Welcher, Ian Whiffen, Jessica Hyde, or Shannon Burgess. They had just saying things without a good faith basis.
Finish him.
In the reports, show us where something has changed.
Your Honor, to inform you, Your Honor, we would like to print the page in the clock adjustment because what Mr.
So,
says is
yes, right. And I'm happy to any information.
Thank you.
All right.
20
minutes. Nine.
Thank you.
All rise for the court, please.
Woo!
Golly.
It's getting hot in here.
It is. Isn't it?
Yeah. I want to play. I just found another version of this clip on X or Twitter or whatever. It's always going to be Twitter to me.
Yeah. Always. It's hard when things rebrand. Like, I've never called Pizza Hut the Hut, or Radio Shack was never the Shack.
The Shack. Yeah. No.
No. It's your original name. Thanks for trying. HBO Max. Knock it off. You heard that?
What?
They went to Max.
I know.
Now
I
back
it.
To HBO Max.
Oh, they are?
Yeah.
Oh.
Like, knock it off.
Wow. I just didn't realize
be
that.
Be who you are. You know, I'm sorry. You're HBO Max. Max, that's the name of a dog next door, you know?
Yeah. Let me try and find this here.
Just weird. I just want you to be who you are, okay? It's not
yesterday
asking too much.
Today, my findings for the record are that...
Okay. I got to frame this here for a second. Okay.
Okay.
This is a shot that is going to show... I'll just put it up full screen as best I can. Bev giving her ruling. Karen Reed, her defense, and her dad, all in the same shot. Two cameras.
Wow.
Picture in picture. So let's, let me try and get this framed up here better. Give me one sec.
This will be impressive.
get this a little bit better here.
And kids, if you're listening to the podcast, we have the YouTube channel that you can watch all of this happening on in real time as we edit live on the air. Okay, here we go. This is a pretty good shot of it. I cannot move Bev there because that's just how it was presented. And that's a shame, but here we go.
Yesterday and today, my findings for the record are that the defendant has not persuaded me of undue surprise or unfair prejudice by this information, and I don't find that there's delayed disclosure. Of course, all of this is ample game for cross-examination. Certainly as to what Mr. Burgess knew, what he looked at, why he looked at it, when he looked at it, why he changed his report, and violation of the sequestration order is all for cross-examination, and I will give you a lot of leeway with that, Mr. Alessi, but I'm not having a voir dire on that. Mr. Alessi, I can tell you, obviously, you've got a great facility for cross-examining on the underlying information here. You've done fulsome cross-examinations. I have every confidence you can do it here again.
Wait for
it. But if after the direct, you demonstrate that you need further time, I'll certainly hear you on that. And more importantly, perhaps, if you feel that the testimony of Jen McCabe and the others that you've mentioned is critical and that you need to recall them, I'll hear you on that as well. So regarding Dr. Welcher, as my understanding, the request yesterday was for, and it's been a request, I think, a few days. We've addressed it at sidebar, and I found that it wasn't the right time. Let's see how much Dr. Welcher could go through.
So that's essentially what it was, but I think the timing on that was off.
As do you imagine a little bit of clock drift? Does that really happen?
Oh, actually, that's a prime example of clock drift, isn't it?
Boom.
But if it had been aligned a little bit better, it would have been timed out. But anyway, I've just kind of found that in real time while we were talking or watching that the testimony there from the attorneys or the arguments from the attorneys. So that's a pretty big deal. This essentially what it is doing is it is matching up the moment that Karen Reed's vehicle registers a strike, because it does, it registers a strike. Mm-hmm. That alone is pretty damning. It was anywhere near the time that this occurred. Even more damning is the fact that the time lines up with the precise time John O'Keefe's phone is, the iPhone is registering that it's not in use anymore. It's not, nothing's happening with it from there.
That's a problem. Forward.
Yeah.
I mean, that just sounds like something happened. Something happened. Why? I mean, those phones are reliable. It was recording everything up until that moment, now wasn't it?
Other than a security camera footage of this, I don't know how much more can match up.
Yeah.
And how much more consciousness of guilt she can express. I don't know how. I mean, if I was on the jury, this would be, I don't have reasonable doubt with these pieces together, the phone and the vehicle strike. Game over.
Yeah.
I mean, if that would be my opinion. I don't see any other room for anything else. Reasonable thing. I mean,
it's very telling.
I mean, I don't know that, and this they're going to go to, and maybe one of the guys that they claim he had a fight with was standing out waiting for him behind Karen's car and punched him. And then his head hit the taillight. And then Karen just drove away and didn't know anything was going on. I mean, maybe that'll be the next theory. I think I just provided a fake theory.
I think you did.
Damn it. But I don't know. I mean, it's just getting so far out there. And the reality of this to me, and you can disagree and that's fine, is that it's just a very simple thing. They were fighting. He got out of the car for whatever reason. She reversed it. I don't believe it was on purpose. I think it was, I want to just tell you one more thing, which is exactly what I've been saying the whole time. And in her drunkenness, thought maybe he was up on the sidewalk.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just probably walking the curb to get back or to go into the door that he never really truly got to. Because Karen, in her own words, has said, I found him exactly where I was expecting to find him. Very close to that way. And as soon as I say, well, it's, there's an as here, or that, you know exactly the phrase I'm talking about.
Yeah.
There he was, like a buffalo in the snow, right where I expected to find him. I expected to find him there. Why did you expect to find him there if you saw him go into the house?
And my question to that is, why did you say that there was like a shard of glass in his nose and you picked it out? Where'd that shard of glass come from?
I'm going to guess the cocktail glass.
Yeah. Or a taillight housing?
No, the housing is a type of plastic.
True. Okay, so the glass was cocktail glass that he was holding.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. There may be an, they may already have the answer to that. I just don't know it off the top of my head.
Nor do I.
You're not paying attention enough. Like, sorry. I just, so much room in my brain. But I'm sure there probably is an answer to that. I just don't have it. Again, it just lines up. Everything just lines up. Why is she saying John's dead? Why is that the first thing on her mind? Why does she think he got hit by a snowplow? If he went all that, if he got into the house, why would that even be a possibility? If you watched him and you saw him go in that house, he just walked back out and then got hit by a snowplow because he wanted to go back out and play in the street
during a snowstorm.
During a snowstorm, I mean, what, where, why would that even run into your mind? Especially when she was, well, that's because she was self-soothing the night before. Telling herself he's cheating. Because it's a lot easier to tell yourself that a lot rather than I just left my boyfriend in the street. He didn't look mortally wounded.
It's probably, and now he's not answering his phone
at all. And by the end of those voicemails, it was not, you're cheating. It was, you're cheating, and this is happening, and more self-soothing to, yep, this is what's really going on, because that's a big thing to take in.
That
maybe he wasn't good when you left. You said he didn't look mortally wounded. Weird thing to say.
Yeah, it is.
Like, he was fine. I just saw him heading towards the door. Didn't look mortally wounded? Where would there be anything about being wounded? It's just, this is just common sense. This is not a rocket science case.
Doesn't feel like it, does it?
No, it's not at the end of the day. Was there, is it a shitty investigation? Without a doubt. And there's plenty of things in that investigation that you just go, what the hell? But at the end of the day, I don't think it adds up to a conspiracy. If the vehicle data matches exactly where his phone stops, and she's saying all this stuff, I mean, come on. And we'll get into other things too in this trial. There's still the Ring video cameras that need to be accounted for, or the videos that appear to have been deleted in the middle of the night.
Yeah, that's a problem.
And she happened to have access to that. I wonder why anyone would do that. I don't know. Come on. I mean, I've been saying, okay, once these two things align, the vehicle, pardon the hitting pun, the vehicle strike and the phone, that's game over. What the cameras being, or the videos being deleted, that's a pretty big one. Why would you be doing that?
Mm-hmm.
Your dad says you told him that you believe you struck something.
And then we have a guy who's almost deceased in a snowbank.
Yeah.
And then a vehicle strike.
So look, it sucks. I don't believe she tried to do it. But I think we have manslaughter at the very least. You know, is it going to teach Karen a lesson? No, I don't. So I don't know. I mean, at the end of the day, there's so many things. Are we going to get to a point of reasonable doubt? That's the biggest question here. To me, I think you're to the point where, beyond a reasonable doubt, she hit him. What's going to keep happening is there's going to be more and more pumped into the room of Proctor, of anything else they're going to bring up that's going to go, oh, that's weird. I mean, one of those things to me was, why did they not test the damn blood?
Yeah.
That seemed, I don't know, that just seems really idiotic to me. I don't know why you wouldn't be testing the blood. He's there. He's dead.
Why wouldn't you be testing everything?
Well, and you still got, why not? I mean, especially if you're looking at this as a murder investigation. I know you think you have the person there, but why? I think it's a pretty big assumption that it's just all his blood everywhere. For the sake of it, test it. Then nobody can question it. This is how conspiracies thrive.
If you have all the data, you can't refute it. Well, some people can refute actual data, but the more truth you've got, the more you can refute conspiracy.
And there's so much shit in here where, yeah, I get it. I get how if you have kind of a, if you lean that way, how you would feel that way. I get it. I was leaning that way, I think, most of the first trial. And then more information came our way, mainly Karen, not shutting up. And everything that she said and all of these, her own words.
Yeah.
Are what seals it for me too. I mean, okay, come on, look at this. This is nuts.
If she hadn't said any of that, in the first trial, there were reports of her saying, did I hit him? Did I hit him? But it didn't stand out as much. Well, now that we heard it from her, it stands out entirely.
Well, she's still reasoning with it. Every time she talks about it, she's like, I thought, could it be this? Because it really could be. And she doesn't preface it as, because at that time I thought it really could be. It's more like, because it really could be. Because she still recognizes.
Still reasoning with it.
She's still reasoning with it. She's still recognizing that this is all very real possibilities. Because it is. It just simply is a real possibility. Your vehicle was there. You have a broken taillight. He was found right there. And his phone dies at precisely the same time. That's a reasonable possibility that you struck him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
At a basic human level, and I feel for John's family, believe me, I do. But I also feel for her. She's going through some trauma too. She has on her brain, I might have killed my boyfriend.
Yeah.
Now, whether she's admitting that or not to herself, this is something she's going to have to address at some point in her life. She's going to have to deal with what happened. And has she? She gotten some help? Is she allowed to get help? I don't know.
I'm sure she's allowed to get help, but does she need it? Does she think she needs it? I mean,
she may not think she needs it, but anybody who's been through a traumatic experience, need to get through that.
I would highly suggest it if she's not already there.
Yeah.
It would certainly be good. I don't know either way, but I hope she is. This would all be said and done if she was honest about it, honestly. That's my opinion. And she probably would be a free woman right now, too. Because at the end of the day, this was a horrible, drunken accident. And at the end of the day, even though it really appears she knew that something happened and it was very likely her.
Yeah.
She chose to go down this road of tormenting all of these people when at the end of the day, she knew damn well that she was the one who likely did it. I couldn't face it. And seems to have zero remorse. In fact, that's her own word. She has zero empathy for any of the people out there.
Yeah.
Any of the witnesses in this case.
Yep.
Because they're all lying. That's a pretty, assume what I just said is true, that she is guilty. She knows that she did it. And she can live this life like that, where you can literally just watch these people being terrorized over a lie that you know is a lie and just keep chugging along, looking good in your pantsuits and, you know, getting all the attention in the world. I mean, that to me is like, that's a stretch. But I think she's capable of it.
I do too.
Judging by her demeanor, judging by everything we've seen. And like I've always said, when you look at the patterns of the behavior, you go, oh, holy crap. Yeah. Capable of a lot. And it is unfathomable, I think, to a lot of people.
Yeah.
But it's not to some of us. But it really pushes the bounds. And I think that's why conspiracy really works on this one, because you really gotta, you know, look at just how dark that would be if this person that you are all behind could be like behind all that and be all okay with it. That's, yeah, I mean, this is like, it's like a little lie that turns into some sort of, you know, giant catastrophe.
And, you know, think about, I like to always think about future stuff. Let's say she gets acquitted of all charges. Mm-hmm. What does she do after this? What is life like for somebody who is involved in something of this nature? I mean, you know, they fall out of the news cycle. We don't talk about them anymore. We don't do episodes about them anymore. What happens to these people once the trial's over and done? You know, we know when people are convicted of crimes and they go to prison, look at Lori Vallow.
Yeah.
Sometimes we see her show up on Dateline or whatever. But what happens to the people who are acquitted? How does their life...
I think once all the fanfare dies down and the FKR folks find their next fix, she'll be known as the woman who drove away from John O'Keefe dying in the snow.
Yeah.
She'll be known as that. I think either way, I think that's how it, because that you may, you know, or allegedly did all that. Because there may be a way where she could be factually innocent. At this point, I don't know how. I think the facts are there. Everyone says, follow the science, follow the data. Well, here's the data, kids.
Yeah.
Here's the facts. There's the science. Got what else you want? His hair is in the damn taillight.
Yeah, that's really problematic.
There's fragments
too.
In his clothes. And yes, it was all thrown into the same big bag. I get it. Not a great handling of that at all whatsoever. No. But why else would there be fragments then in there? Maybe it wasn't exactly in the shirt. Maybe, you know, well, I get, you know, the point of like, well, exactly where was the impact or where was the fragments? But you got to keep in mind too, if you're crashing into something and it's frozen and it's that plastic, that shit will shatter 10 times worse than it would on a hot sunny day where it would just go.
Yeah.
In that case, you get shards. It's like, you know, breaking an ice, a giant thin piece of ice and it goes, or glass goes everywhere. Yep. And they're propelling. So it's going to be all over the place. It would be nice though to know it should have been handled much better without a doubt, but the shards are there.
You know what I'd like to see is like Mythbusters. Like, could they come up with, I've been practicing martial arts for a couple of months now, and there's a dummy called Bob. And Bob is like, he's on a pedestal, and it's basically the torso and a head mm-hmm. of a nondescript man. And I would like to see them set up Bob with like a hoodie.
Yeah.
And the taillight of a car and back into him at the speed and mm-hmm. see what you can get. Like freeze Bob, you know, yeah. Could you get those fragments in a recreation of this scenario?
Yeah.
Now, if they couldn't, I mean, it could have been a very rare circumstance where this happened.
Yeah.
And everything just lined up perfectly and you can't recreate it, or they could recreate it. Then what?
I mean, there's a lot of, you know, control
factors. A lot of variables there.
Yeah, but, a lot of variables there.
But I mean, it'll be interesting
I've seen some people do their own kind of reenactment where they have like a fake arm out and then they have the tail light and they run it back at that point and what happens to it. And it's the few I've seen are like been done in the desert and it looks a little warm. Yes, I know the desert can get cold, but it doesn't seem to really emulate a frozen night during a nor'easter.
Right.
And you see the tail light break, certainly not into as many pieces as was in this, but again, temperature plays a big deal in how that thing's going to shatter.
Well, and how old is the tail light? You know, was it close to being ready to break at just the slightest little impact? Yeah. Was it compromised from numerous other, hitting things?
I'm all for like testing that shit under the correct circumstances and conditions.
Yeah.
And, maybe they have with some of it, but I don't know, not a very good day. I mean, again, each side seems to look at every day as a good day for them. So I don't know how, but okay. Everybody's got their own sides to this. I'm just kind of baffled sometimes on this one. Cause I don't know, to me, it just seems kind of straightforward, but I agree. There's shadiness over there and there's a lot of things that were done horribly and stupidly. Mm-hmm. And that's where you can get possibly to reasonable doubt, I guess, depending on how much you believe in humanity, I think might be the answer to that question. How jaded might you be to that? How many people like this have you had in your life? That's all going to answer that. Cause I can guarantee there's people on that jury that are going, oh, I know somebody just like this. And that's not going to bode well. But you also have some that are going to go, I know somebody just like this, and they're the most lovely person I know. And they're so persecuted. You're going to have it both ways. So, yeah, depending on how much, I don't know. But to me, it feels very clear. But at the end of the day, I'm not going to be very surprised if there's another hung jury. I'm just not.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.